You're listening to Pythagoras' Trousers.
Hello and welcome to the final Pythagorean Astronomy of 2018. And I'm joined again by Sarah Roberts and Dr. Matt Allen, both from here in Cardiff. So welcome both again for the final time. Should say we're recording this a couple of weeks before the broadcast at the end of the year. So a caveat that if anything really exciting has happened in the last couple of weeks, we don't know about it. I guess that's worth pointing out. Okay, so things that have happened in 2018 that have excited us in the world of astronomy and space exploration and so on.
Yeah, so it's been a fantastic year for exploration within our solar system, particularly as far as planetary science goes. We had the successful landing of the InSight probe on Mars. We had some results coming back from Curiosity. And we had the launch of BepE Colombo, which is a long-awaited mission to Mercury. It's a mission from the Japanese Aerospace Exploration Agency and the European Space Agency. And of course, it launched this year, and the journey to Mercury will take about 7 years. So the spacecraft won't arrive in orbit around Mercury until 2025. But the launch this October is still an exciting milestone for the mission and for planetary scientists in general.
The main challenge we get into Mercury is they've got to slow down enough to be captured into Mercury's orbit. That's because if it were to just go straight there, it would fly straight past. And it does that with this ion engine, which sounds like something out of Star Wars. Well, it is. They have ion engines in Star Wars, but this is real life. This is not science fiction. To compare with that, I saw a tweet the other day saying that the force in the ion engine is equivalent to something like 100 ants pulling on the spacecraft. We're just working constantly to try and take out speed from the spacecraft as well.
Yeah, so getting into a stable orbit is one of the biggest challenges of this mission because it has to slow down, but also because of its proximity to the sun. You've got the sun's strong gravity pulling on the spacecraft. And also the proximity to the sun means that the spacecraft will have to deal with extremely high temperatures, reaching about 450 degrees Celsius. So it is a challenging mission, but if everything goes to plan, it'll be very much worthwhile. There's only been, I think, two missions to Mercury previously, so there's still a lot to learn. I think one of the biggest mysteries that BepE Colombo will be looking at is the mystery of Mercury's giant core, which takes up a substantial amount of the planet's volume. I think it's about 55%.
Yeah, by I can't remember, it's mass or volume, but it's a large fraction, much larger than most other planets, yeah.
Yeah, whereas Earth's is about 20%. And it's likely this is because the outer layers of the planet were lost at some point, but hopefully BepE Colombo can tell us a bit more about that.
Excellent. And other missions that have been launching in towards the inner solar system, in fact, the innermost bit of the solar system. Matt, we've got a solar probe.
Yeah, it's the Parker Space Probe, which is a NASA mission, which launched back in August this year. And it has the same kind of problems that BepE Colombo has. It's slowing down, in fact. So it's very easy to get to the sun, but sort of slowing yourself down and get to a nice stable orbit around the sun, that's a bit of a difficult problem, especially because the sun has such strong gravity. So in fact, Parker Space Probe is going on this really interesting kind of orbit where it's going to pass by Venus sort of around seven times to slow it down so it goes into a nice stable orbit around the sun. It's trying to kind of study what makes the corona, sort of the outer part of the sun, so much hotter than the rest of it. It's studying the structure and dynamics of the magnetic field, and hopefully try and understand what accelerates the energetic particles from the sun. So yeah, it's really, really exciting at the moment. And again, it has a similar kind of problems to BepE Colombo. It's going to get so close to the sun that it's going to get really, really hot. So a lot of time and effort's gone into shielding it from the heat from the sun as well. So a lot more challenges in it, but everything so far has been really, really good. And I think the data is sort of coming out in December for the first time. So yeah, hopefully it's start getting some interesting results.
So it's on one flyby of the sun already from its first zoom inwards, but its closest approach, as you say, in about 7 years, is going to be within 4 million kilometres, I think, of the sun. It might be 4 million miles. Doesn't make a lot of difference. That's very, very close compared with where we
indeed,
are.
Indeed, yeah.
So it's much, much closer to the sun than the Earth is. So it's going to be a really fascinating insight into what's going on around the sun. Elsewhere in the solar system, we've had the Hayabusa mission has gone out to the asteroid Ryugu, and it's a Japanese mission, that has managed to go into orbit around this little asteroid. It's released two rovers down to the surface, Minerva 1, A and B, and they've hopped around a little bit. And then another German-built probe, which has gone down to the surface as well. They've been trying to sample bits of the surface, look at the environment around the asteroid. It's got lots of little boulders on it, which is quite interesting and not clear where they came from. And Hayabusa is still approaching the asteroid and preparing for a closer encounter itself next year and further rover drops. Elsewhere in the around other asteroids, so that Hayabusa is a Japanese probe, NASA have got OSIRIS-REx, which is approaching asteroid Bennu, which is a near-Earth asteroid. It's going to approach quite close to the Earth a number of times. Not dangerous as far as we know. That is also planning to get samples from the surface, but for the moment it's just approaching the asteroid as well. And it's going to, next year, do much more, much closer approaches and eventually trying to take samples from the asteroid's surface as well. So exciting things next year from asteroids further out in the solar system. Elsewhere in the solar system, water on Mars, Matt.
Yeah, yes, this is a really interesting thing. So a bit earlier this year, Mars Express, which is a satellite that's been working, going orbiting around Mars since about 2003, I think, so some time it's been there, has been trying to look underneath the surface of Mars. So we know that on the surface of Mars there's water ice, but we haven't found any liquid water so far, just due to the conditions on the surface of Mars. It's just not suitable for liquid water to exist. But actually, one of the instruments on board Mars Express has been able to look underneath the surface of Mars, and they found something which they think is probably liquid water. So it's underneath a kind of a giant ice glacier that's underneath the surface, but right down there the pressure is high enough, and they think that the water down there might be sort of salt water, and so that actually can hopefully mean that the water can stay as liquid water instead of ice, which is a really interesting thing. So hopefully we might be able to find some evidence of water beneath the surface of Mars, and you know, who knows what that might mean for what we can discover in the future as well.
Yeah, we get stories about water on Mars every few months, it seems to be, or certainly a few times a year. But this was a little bit different because it was this very large body of water under the surface, which is a change from the past. And good to see results still coming out of these spacecraft that have been there for quite a long time. Looking further in the solar system, what have we had going on? We've had exoplanets discovered. Again, that's happening all the time. We've had lots of exoplanets discovered over the last few years, but we had a planet that was dubbed Vulcan because it was very close to its host star. And again, going around the star that in Star Trek canon was apparently where the planet Vulcan is going around. So that was good fun. We've had extra investigations of the TRAPPIST-1 planets. These are around a very close star, or relatively close star, which and now we think some of those might be habitable, red dwarf stars, so much smaller than the Sun is. And in years to come, next year, in fact, we've got the launch of the CHEOPS mission from the European Space Agency, which is going to study planets in much more detail. It's going to look at very Earth-like planets next year. It's going to launch towards the end of the year, but it does mean that our studies of exoplanets are going from strength to strength. I mean, this is something that Sarah, you run the Space Scoop, or you write some of the Space Scoop stories, and there are lots of exoplanet stories in that all the time.
There was one in early December, just before we recorded this, about the confirmation of over 100 planets from the K2 mission. So of course we detect planets with missions like K2, and then we have to confirm them with secondary observations. So we had a huge stockpile of 100 planets. What exoplanets confirmed?
And there'll be lots more of that going on in 2019. And CHEOPS is building up. When that launches and starts taking observations, that's going to be getting targets ready for the next generation of missions that are going to study planets. So the James Webb Space Telescope, which is going to launch at some point in the future. The launch is slipping year on year.
Further away.
That'll get targets for future missions to observe. What else is happening? At the start of the year, Matt, you talked about the Parker Solar Probe going in towards the Sun. We've got a probe that's going the other way.
Yeah, so New Horizons, which you probably remember from the last few years, actually went past Pluto and took the really, really amazing photos of the surface of Pluto. But it actually didn't stop there, it just kind of flew by, and it's now making its way out of the solar system. But before it does, it's going to pass by one of the asteroids that's thought to come from the Kuiper Belt. I think it's a trans-Neptunian object. And this asteroid, it's going to do a flyby of it. It's going to map the surface, study the geology, temperature, tomography, see if it has a coma, see if it has any satellites, try and measure the mass. So a really, really great study look at a very distant asteroid in our solar system. And it's going to get something within about 3,500 kilometres, I think. So really, really close. And that will actually be, the closest approach will be on the 1st of January. So a great new way to welcome the new year with hopefully some interesting kind of science and some results coming from that. And then after that, it will just keep going. So New Horizons will fly out of our solar system and it will follow Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 out into deep space.
And we just had reports this month, of course, that Voyager 2 has now seems to be leaving the heliosphere, leaving the part of the solar system where the sun's the particles from the sun have a greater impact, and is entering interstellar space, still under the gravitational pull of the sun, of course. It's being decelerated all the time, but it will eventually escape, and eventually New Horizons will follow it as well. Now, the asteroid, or the object it's visiting out in the Kuiper Belt, is called Ultima Thule. I'm not exactly sure how you meant to pronounce it, and it's much smaller than Pluto, so rather than being a few thousand kilometres across, it's a few hundred kilometres across instead. Those are all robotic spacecraft. Sarah, there's a lot going on at the moment with crewed spacecraft, with people flying into space as well. What's been going on? What's due to happen in the next year?
Yeah, you're right. So 2019 is shaping up to be a big year for private spaceflight. We've got a number of big players that are poised to send passengers into space next year. This includes Boeing, SpaceX, Blue Origin, and recently we had Virgin Galactic kicking this off. They debatedly sent test pilots into space at the beginning of December.
Debated because they only just crossed what's sometimes thought to be a threshold of space, about 50 miles up.
Exactly, yeah. So the boundary for space is debatable. Scientists attempt to set the boundary based on how low you can go and stay in orbit. And this altitude is called the Kármán line. So it's largely regarded as being 100 kilometres above the surface of the Earth. But there was a recent paper this year, or a paper that came out this year, not so recent, that recalculated this altitude to about 80 kilometres. And that would have been just enough to mean that the Virgin Galactic Spaceship 2, as it was called, did reach space as it intended to.
I think it's something like 83 kilometres or something.
Yeah,
so it's just over the line.
Tipped over, yeah. So either way, these were the only people on the spacecraft were test pilots. There were no passengers. But of course, that's the ultimate goal, is to either send tourists to space and ferry them back, or in the case of SpaceX, carry astronauts. So next year, hopefully around June next year, of course that might change, the Crew Dragon spacecraft from SpaceX hopes to ferry astronauts to the International Space Station.
Which will be the first time that astronauts have launched from US soil in quite some time, since the last launch of the space shuttle, of course. And there's a lot going on in crewed spaceflight. So we've got, as you said, Dragon taking people to the space station as a test flight in April. The Boeing company have got a Starliner spacecraft is going also in 2019. That's the plan. Blue Origin are a company that has smaller rockets there. I don't think they're planning on sending much stuff to the space station, but they'll be able to launch stuff into orbit as well, of course. For people who want to be tourists on these, then there's a fairly hefty price tag. So I think the price tag on Virgin Galactic of doing this suborbital flight and just dipping into weightlessness for a few minutes or whatever it is £100,000 or $100,000, something like that. It's not cheap. And then it's, at the moment, to go to the space station, it's millions of pounds, millions of dollars. So the question for you two then is, if you had £1 million or £10 million or whatever it is, money was no object, would you take a trip to the space station?
Yeah. I like to think I would. I'm not sure. It's quite terrifying, the idea of not only launching on this huge, powerful rocket, but also landing again.
Yeah. It's risky.
It's quite terrifying.
Yeah, I think it's not the launch or the landing, but I'm slightly claustrophobic. So I think it's either being inside the capsule or being just inside the space station, which is, I mean, someone always describes it, it's about the same size as a 5-bedroom house, which actually doesn't sound that big when you're kind of floating through space with everything else that's up there as well. So yeah, I don't know, maybe claustrophobia would be a bit of a scary thing.
I think the internal volume is described to me by Pierce Sellers, a British born astronaut who sadly died a year or so ago, that the interior is about the size of two like 747 cabins, sort of bolted together, so two jumbo jet cabins.
Well, maybe not too bad.
So, yeah. So not, if you're going up there for 1 to 3 days, like the other tourists, it's yeah, not too bad
yeah
at all.
Yeah.
And if you add 100,000, 200,000, would you take a suborbital dip for a bit of weightlessness, do you think?
Yes.
Yeah.
That'd be much
more fun.
I
don't think I would.
Oh, really?
No.
You can go to the space station and I'll just do the suborbital flight there, perhaps.
You could do it 100 times the same cost.
Exactly.
Maybe.
You
yeah
can do
yeah
these zero gravity experiences on Earth now, so.
And
planes give you a fairly good view of the planet.
I think there'd be quite something to see the curvature of the Earth from orbit. I think I'm possibly with Sarah that I wouldn't pay for the Virgin Galactic type experience, but you know, I think I'd be tempted by the space station, but it is a risky business to go up there.
Oh, well, maybe for your next birthday, me and Sarah will chip in. And,
Anyway, we'll see what happens then. Lots happening next year. We haven't talked about the start of the LIGO Virgo run, so detecting collisions of black holes. There's going to be dozens. Hopefully, that's the plan found with LIGO Virgo. We'll see how many are found through that. And there's all the other stuff. We talked about missions to asteroids, Mercury, the Sun, and crewed spaceflight, and lots more beyond that we'll be talking about in 2019 on Pythagorean Astronomy. Don't forget, you can go online and get past episodes of this podcast and subscribe to it at pythagastro.uk. Until next year, goodbye.
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 You've been listening to Pythagorean Astronomy, an extended version of this month's Astronomy Roundup from Pythagoras' Trousers, a weekly science and technology radio show presented by me, Rhys Phillips. You can catch up on full episodes of Pythagoras' Trousers, subscribe to our podcast, and get in touch by going to www.pythagoras-trousers.radio.fm.